Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we're chatting about the latest episodes of In the City, The Valley, and Next Gen NYC with Ryan Bailey. You likely already know Ryan. He is a return guest to the podcast who hosts his massive podcast, So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. And we had a great chat. And he also recently became a parent, which I think informed some of our chat about The Valley, which I found really interesting to get his perspective on. But right before I started recording this intro, Bravo confirmed what many people already knew, because Summer House had started filming in the Hamptons this past weekend, and the cast had been spotted out, of course. But Bravo did what they've smartly been doing with almost every show, which is confirming cast members and announcements at the beginning of filming before everything inevitably leaks, so that they can control those big pieces of news. They're doing it with most Housewives franchises, with a lot of these younger shows, and they did it with Summer House this season. So returning to Summer House from last season for season 11 are Carl, Lindsay, Kyle, Sierra, Jesse, Mia, Bailey, and KJ. And so that means that West, Amanda, Levi, Dara, Ben, and Sabrina are all officially out as friends of or cast members or recurring people. It seems, at least, justice for Dara, if you ask me. But hopefully there's some space for her somewhere going forward. But yeah, for the first time ever, it is going to be a house full of single people. I mean, as far as we know, they all seem single. And also, this is, Bravo made sure to say, this is the returning cast from last season. So there are likely some new additions that we do not know yet that are going to be on season 11. So, I mean, my big takeaway here is ultimately, I'm really glad that Sierra decided to come back. She confirmed that she was officially coming back on the final After Sun, which aired on Saturday. I think they recorded those on Fridays. She recorded that virtually because she had already come back to New York. And she said that was because she had to film season 11 of Summer House. So yeah, it was just like, it's just such good news. She did that with Teffy. And I think that final episode of After Sun, by the way, just a couple of Love Island thoughts thrown in here for you. I thought that was one of the best episodes of this entire season of Love Island, not just the best After Sun. They had a really big emotional moment together where they both cried. The interview with Kenzie was amazing. It was just an all-around great episode, and I really, really liked it, and they really found their groove in that last After Sun. I mean, they were good all season, but especially that one. And I'm happy Brinity, Bryce, and Trinity won the season. It was kind of a no-brainer to me, but also put Kenzie on Dancing with the Stars with Sierra so that she can clam slam on the premiere. Pretty please. That woman is a star. I think it's silly that the reunion is not for a month and a half. Like, that is just like too much time. I will have surely lost interest in most, if not all, of these people by the time that comes around. But will I still watch it? Absolutely. And then will I feel like I have wasted my time? Absolutely. But that is just how life goes these days, isn't it? Anyway, I think that it was a smart move for Sierra to come back. I think, you know, continue to build on the momentum that she has built for her career off the back of the season 10 scandal, you know, continue sharing her incredible personal story, because lest we forget, that last season was amazing for her before this all happened. Like, she was sharing so much and it was such a joy, and she was such good vibes and going out. And, you know, hopefully we can see her working more on her grandfather's house that she bought. Hopefully we see her continue to be outside and go out with Mia and KJ and the rest of the girls. And then maybe sail off into the sunset and do Dancing with the Stars in the fall, because it's hard to imagine that she would be able to do In the City as well as Dancing with the Stars, because I know a lot of people talk about wanting her in the City. Dancing with the Stars is obviously in LA, and it films at the same time that In the City would film. So I don't think that's plausible. But in my vision, in my grand vision for Sierra, she's on In the City season 3. And, you know, I would watch Sierra for years to come. So hopefully she's on season 12 of Summer House, season 3 of In the City. I'll take her wherever we can get her, but that's my sort of vision for her. But I feel like deciding to come back for this season, at least, It marks this show officially as her territory, not West or Amanda's. This is her friend group. She's there to also continue to build up KJ and Mia and their sophomore seasons. You know, maybe hear more about how, you know, that burgeoning friend group of three people have supported each other through very difficult times for the past year. Mia with her breakup, Sierra with the West and Amanda scandal, KJ with his mental health struggles. They were all clearly there for each other, and I'd like to hear more about that, because I think, you know, on the reunion, there was only so much space to hear about those things, and also KJ's breakup. And then also just make it fun overall this season. I mean, if this is maybe perhaps Sierra's final season on Summer House, again, I really hope that's not the case, but let's just say it is. Let's just say this is like one final hurrah for her before she moves on to different things. make it a fun season. You know, like after last season's intensity, make it a fun one. You know, I hope we still obviously get drama, but like that's sort of what I envision for this. Good vibes, like send that message and go out with that bang if that's indeed what's going to happen. Again, that is just totally based on like, you know, where I feel like her trajectory is going. But I hope, again, that she stays on Bravo. And it's just like, yeah, she has all these amazing, incredible opportunities. I think the only way to ensure they continue to come is to stay on the show and have this central vehicle of Summer House. Because plenty of people leave reality shows. They have amazing opportunities. When they don't have that show and they're no longer sharing their life, sometimes people continue getting those opportunities and sometimes they don't. I would envision Sierra continuing to get them, but just stay on the show to make sure that that still keeps happening. And I feel like I think this about 99% of reality stars, not just Sierra, that like having that show at the core is so important. And I think also like if Sierra then gets another season of After Sun with Teffy, which I mean, it was very well received despite some of the made up controversy on social media about it, that would help solidify things outside of Summer House for her as well in my eyes. So give it like one more calendar year basically to really shore things up. And yeah, anyway, I just think this was absolutely the right decision for Sierra. And I hope and assume that she's being paid handsomely for staying loyal to the network. And hopefully season 11 is not all about, you know, post-scandal. And we really are moving forward as a house full of singles in a new house. Lindsay called the first weekend great on Threads and Mia agreed. So let the games begin, guys. Keep listening for my chat with Ryan Bailey all about In the City, The Valley, and Next Gen NYC. Check out his podcast, So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, wherever you get your podcasts. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib, wherever you're listening to this right now. I want to gab. There are so many things that I love about summer, but one of my favorites is just how easy it is to get dressed. I usually find myself reaching for the same relaxed, comfortable, works with everything pieces, and that's why I keep coming back to Quince. With a focus on well-made essentials, Quince items quickly become everyday necessities that you'll keep wearing again and again. One of my current faves is the Cotton Modal Crew Neck Tee, which I have in a few different neutral colors. It's so soft and it works just as well with a simple pair of shorts for a casual daytime birthday party as it does tucked into a pair of chinos with a matching jacket for that upcoming welcome wedding drinks that you aren't sure what to wear to. I also love how breathable it is, which helps to manage sweat on a hot summer day. Make your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/gabbingwithgib for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/gabbingwithgib for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/gabbingwithgib. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe that getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. One way to close that gap and fight the stigma around mental health support is to be open about your own positive experience in seeking help, to encourage your loved ones to do the same and experience those same benefits. Because really, the numbers do speak for themselves. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists, making it the world's largest online therapy platform. It has served over 6 million people globally and boasts an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, which is based on over 1.7 million client reviews. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. All right, today we're gabbing with Ryan Bailey, host of the podcast So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. He's a return guest to the show. He's here to help me break down In the City, The Valley, and Next Gen NYC. Ryan, thanks for being here. How's it going?
It's going, man. We're knee deep in a bunch of Bravo shows and Love Island. And I mean, just it's a lot. There's a lot happening right now. And it feels, I should just be thankful, but it just feels like a lot.
And for me, I mean, we just mentioned this offline, but for me, it is Love Island that makes it feel like a lot. Like the idea of having something every single day to watch, it's over an hour every time. It's difficult for me to like have that exist with everything else personally. So I'm looking forward to that coming to an end.
I think if you take these shows seriously, as we all do, is that I appreciate people treating these Islanders and taking every one of their relationships seriously. But sometimes I always am like, is it worth it? Do they, you know, these are young kids.
And yeah,
I think it just comes with perspective of being somebody older. And I have to respect like a younger audience that are so involved. But I woke up with like a psychic hangover from the Valley last night, really trying to think about Danny and Nia and the other group in the Valley. And I feel like, well, this is like real world situations where Love Island is obviously a sociological experiment, but. And sometimes I'm like, is it worth the experiment? I feel like we've already gotten the test results.
That is such a good way of putting it, especially when you compare it to the Valley, which we'll get to in just a second. In the city, we now know that next week is the finale, and we'll get into this week's episode. But like, how do you feel about this first season of the show? We're getting a reunion. It, you know, it was birthed sort of like still towards the end of the Summer House scandal. So it's had like an interesting experience as a first season of a Bravo show, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's undue pressure on the show because of the Amanda and Wes situation.
Yeah.
But having said all that, I've fought with people about this, but I personally enjoy it. And even where I felt very satisfied and enjoying it was the dinner scene from last week's episode, like the 30-minute dinner scene at Yvonne's wedding dinner, where I was like, okay, we're good. This is going to be fine. We're just watching people, a mix of new and old people, learn how to film a reality show. So you saw some people like Lindsay was working hard, man. Lindsay, like, you know, it's, and I think that kind of meta quality, the audiences are very sophisticated that we can also see it's like they want this to work. And even where we left off and in the city this week with Lindsay going, come on, Kyle's cheated so many times. We just don't talk about it. I'm like, yes, these are the building blocks that are going to make this a successful second season show where people are going to catch up to this show. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting because we do have a little bit of a Valley situation going on where we have multiple cast members that are pregnant. Danielle already had her baby. We have two more babies coming, maybe three if Amanda's pregnant. And so we'll see what the second season is like.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I think that like the dinner scene and then this week, it's proving to me that they had figured it out and that they're already leveling up from those first like six episodes or whatever. So I just want to get into this week's drama. So they go to this Connecticut house and Lindsay and Georgina claim the primary bedroom because they're two single moms and they need the sleep. Meanwhile, Kenny has like said that Yvonne and Nick should get that as an olive branch for them, like kind of ruining this dinner that we're alluding to from the week before. But Lindsay and Georgina didn't know about that olive branch plan. So what did you like? Obviously, like it would have been great if Nick and Yvonne had gotten that. I think that is a nice gesture.
Sure.
But I think the rollout of it maybe makes me question the intentions that Kenny had with it.
Well, this is another reason why I feel pretty good about the show, because fighting over a room is a cornerstone of any reality television show dating back from the Real World. Like those are the big, like who gets in the Real World space first, who chooses the room first. So it's always nice where I'm like, okay, first season, we're getting a room fight out of the way. Just like last week with the dinner scene at the very end, after all of this insane arguments from everybody at Kenny and Lindsay. But like, by the way, we all need a vacation together. Let's all go vacationing. And I'm like, yes, the awkward bringing up of having to go on a cast trip together. So I appreciated it, but I can see it both sides in reality. And the reality is Kenny didn't find the place. Lindsay and Georgina found it. And as Georgina said on Watch What Happens Live, she had already like put out her stuff. This was a big, nice place. I don't think it should have been that big of a deal, but everything is a big deal on reality television. So I felt like it was safe. It wasn't like emotionally torturous, like watching Amanda and Kyle for clues.
Certainly not. But I do think that, unfortunately for Kenny, honestly, Whitney's the one who sort of took it to a next level by the comment that she made about Lindsay pulling the single mom card and bringing it up to Lexi. And it wasn't just that. Then she sort of doubled down and was like, she has all these nannies and all these other moms don't have nannies. And it's like, well, I think they're trying to walk it back maybe on social media this week. But like she kind of took this situation and brought it up a notch in a way that's not good for her and Kenny. You know, that's hard to defend.
It's not good for her and Kenny, but it's good for her and Kenny as reality stars.
For sure.
Like there is something of like, it gives you play, you know, it gives you like, ooh, this is like a villain couple potentially. And Lindsay has had many moments in her reality television career where she's considered like villain or villain adjacent.
Totally.
So it's exciting that she is almost in some views of like of Kenny and like that she's like the big bad of we've got to take down Lindsay. We've got to get other people upset at Lindsay. And that's somebody big to come after. And so I'm really curious to see the finale. Obviously, mm-hmm. they picked back up cameras again with the Kyle and Amanda of it all. But I think this is exact. It's going exactly how it should be. But it is interesting when you see the online stuff play out where you're like, wow, they're really Lindsay's arguing back in the comments.
They're in the
weeds. They're taking this very seriously, which I also appreciate because I always want to believe that they have real skin in the game mm-hmm. and that this isn't some sort of like, you know, MGM old studio system of how we make the movies, you know?
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think, unfortunately for Whitney, she's not a match for Lindsay. I think Kenny kind of is. I think that Kenny and Lindsay have this potential to have like a really good, like kind of seasons long thing of kind of, you know, him sort of challenging her spot. And I think that's good for the show. But, you know, but it's Whitney who said the comment. And I just don't think that she's going to be able to back that up. I mean, it's not just Lindsay, it's also Georgina. And Georgina feels just as strongly because she's also a single mom. And I love when Lexi was sort of repeating Whitney's comment to them in the bathroom. And she was like, well, you should tell Whitney to never say that ever again.
Well, I feel bad.
And then she also pointed out that Whitney's boyfriend, Kenny, was raised by a single mom. And so it's just not a good look for Whitney kind of on all fronts, I think.
I would never want to go up against Lindsay in anything. And like, that's the kind of like, don't worry about Kenny chasing Whitney off. Lindsay's going to make Whitney move back to Los Angeles.
Exactly.
Like that, I would never, I mean, like, and it'll be interesting to see how Whitney confronts that situation. And mm-hmm. then we'll obviously have that brought up at the reunion as well. And to see what a little time has done with that situation. But for me, I'm like, I'm at a point where I still like everybody on this cast, even the people that I don't agree with, which I think is a good sign when you're like, okay, I can see why they're on this. And you see some people coming out of their shells and you're like, okay, I see why this person's
totally.
Here, why this person is here. So for me, it has like the building blocks. It has like it has good bones, right? It's like mm-hmm. a good structure.
Yeah. I think one of the things for me that I'm like watching is when you cast a couple on these shows, it's hard to have both of them be really, really good at this. I think the Valley got kind of lucky with some of the couples that they cast were like both that like Michelle and Jesse are both pretty good reality stars, you know, like whereas
Wait,
like
do you, I mean you do, I mean, see do you Michelle I've really grown to appreciate, but I don't know, and I say this really gently and with love in my heart, I don't know if she ever pops on screen. I've grown to appreciate her journey, but like Jesse pops on screen.
Yeah, but I've always Michelle, there's something that she was always pretty open, and I thought that like, and maybe it was because their relationship was sort of coming apart during that first season, so there was something for her to really latch onto and talk about and like get emotional about, I guess. But I consider her to be a good reality star, and I, not that the other people on In the City like can't become better, but I'm watchful of like, okay, in some of these couples, like how are both sides of the couple like going to be really, really good at this? Are they going to be more supporting characters? I don't really know, but it's something I'm watching in terms of just like the In the City cast in general, and maybe thinking about what it looks like in a second season, you know?
Well, I am quite like that. Half the time I watch the Valley when I'm trying not to like just throw myself out of my window is I try to like go, well, what do we do with this cast? Because what yeah. the reunion, wasn't there like 14 seats or something?
It's like 50 people.
Yeah, we didn't even have Benji out there, but we had such a huge amount of people where I'm like, they got to make some cuts. Where do you cut? And then I kept thinking, well, if Michelle is truly with Dr. Dre, which, by the way, next gen,
Georgia not knowing Dr. Dre,
I was like, wow.
Actually, I was shocked.
It was because I was like facing
she's
my own
girl.
Mortality. I was like, you don't even know who
Dr.
Dre is.
She's also like pretty hip. So I was like kind of, yeah, I don't know. Obviously kind of before her time, but like I'm surprised that she wasn't hip to that personally.
There is part of me that thinks that Michelle might choose not to come back. And like, you know, because if you're in a relationship with a billionaire, regardless of who it is, I would imagine not that you're taken care of, but that you don't want any aspect of your life or anybody that you're associated with in your life to be doing a full-blown reality show. I mean, that's the only thing I was thinking about.
Yeah.
And the pressure that you get, not only from filming the show, but from the fans of the show, that's got to be intense. And we as fans are, it's reiterated to us every day, even Lindsay on Threads this week, talking about, you know, like, mm-hmm. You know, bullying and things of that nature. You sometimes forget what you have to deal with if you're on the other side of the camera.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I don't know. I feel like Michelle's gotten to a point where she enjoys it, but it depends on if he would want her to do that, if that is actually like a relationship that she wants to, you know, affect her career.
It would kind of go against her as one of those people of like, oh, you're not willing to share your relationship on camera.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because if 100%. I was Dr. Dre, can you imagine Dr. Dre in a scene with Danny Bucco?
No, I mean, there's no
way. Like, Danny's like, let's go. And he's like, let's go.
There's no way that Dr. Dre would film more than like a dinner scene with Michelle, like a one-on-one, you know, if he did that at all, you know, like, I don't know.
Dr. Dre has to set Jesse Lally straight, you know, like.
I can't. Thinking about that. Finishing off in the city, though, we have Gavin, who is like continuing to pot stir, which is thank you for your service.
Great.
You know, he's doing it at the dinner, Yvonne and Nick's dinner. He's doing it at this dinner, bringing up Kyle's, you know, booked and busy as a DJ. And it really does always come back to the DJing for Kyle and Amanda. Like, that is the straw that broke the camel's back for them. It is going to be the point in contention forever. She's like, Amanda hears this. She's like, well, you haven't run this by me. You're planning a future without me. Danielle said that Kyle has found a loophole to continue partying to kind of get around Amanda's like big ask. And then Owen is kind of the person who maybe kind of actually kicks it into high gear too, where he's like, I see your relationship is sort of what the end of mine looked like in my marriage. And I'm recognizing that. Andrea gets in there and he's like, Kyle, man, like, you got to like relax. What did you make of like this latest blow up with Kyle and Amanda?
You know, I mean, it's par for course. I mean, yeah. I do, you know, and we're also coming off the heels of like, we fought about his DJ gig in Vegas on the Freedom Dinner, obviously. And so it felt interesting that Amanda was, you know, acting surprised again, or I thought that was interesting. And I don't know how much of that was suspending disbelief for a new show. So it might not be Amanda's fault, but I was like, how many times can we fight about this DJ thing? I had Georgina on the podcast this week. And I said, as an outsider, what was your take on Amanda and Kyle in terms of working on their relationship? And she was like, yeah, I mean, it was obvious that it wasn't working. Like, they gave it a good go. They gave it a good shot. And at this point, I think we can all agree, no matter if we leave the West and all that stuff out of it, that these are two people that they might have deep love for each other that obviously, even as they say, are not in love with each other. So the fact that we're still mining it for these fights, I almost feel like it's Amanda wanting sympathy and empathy from those cast members and from the audience. But I think the thing is, we do know this information. You know, it is Kyle. I mean, really, what a blessing, this weird blessing this has all been for him, as everybody says, because he really would have had a lot to answer for if not for this thing. And we all kind of say the same thing of like, man, I love Kyle, but it doesn't excuse what he did. I think it's really bad what he did.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I really love that guy.
That's the party line. Yeah.
Yeah. We all like whisper, but he's really bad stuff. Really. But we have to admit that Kyle's a very likable guy. And I mean, he's a good DJ. I've heard him DJ. I will say that. I've heard a lot of Bravo DJs in person. He's actually good.
Well, also like towards the end of Summer House, was at the reunion, we got so much more context as to like part of the reason why he did start DJing. Part of it was obviously sort of a vanity project, but the other part of it is that he needed the money, and like, he pays for all their rent. Like, he was in all this debt, and he gets paid well for these DJ gigs. So that's also a big aspect of it from a business perspective. So that's where I think that Amanda's perspective on it, it loses some traction for me, because like, he's essentially like funding their entire lifestyle for 3 years.
I think that's been an interesting storyline of, and they just let the cameras pick it up, of Amanda being a mess, Amanda being a slob, Amanda not being able to clean up after herself. And we saw a little bit of that, of Kyle complaining about her. And I thought, oh my God, how ridiculous. And then you see, you know, the status of their bathroom and their bathtub, and you're like,
yeah,
oh my God.
Rough.
And I, you know, I understand that there is actual depression, and I understand people go through, but when she's considering her, you know, well, Kyle, our place is my closet, and this is my new place that I want to keep nice, it sometimes loses a little bit of the argument, or you're trying to understand, and it's somebody that like wants their cake and to eat it too, a little bit. And I try to be empathetic with Amanda, or I'm trying more to be, but it still is like, dude, he's getting off his ass and trying to save a company. I mean, it's all for self-serving reasons, but he's actually found something that works, that he's good at, that he's passionate with, and you're just still complaining. And you do, by the way, Amanda does have a lot to complain about. We saw it. I can't imagine what it was like to feel that lonely in a marriage. And that's why they're both out of that marriage now. And so hopefully, I still, at the end of the day, I can't believe the West of it all. And
I know. I still can't believe it.
Yeah, I think he'll be a cast member on In the City if they're still together.
That's your prediction. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like if they're still together, it's like people are going to, people want to see how that continues, like whether people want to admit that or not. There was the big reveal that you mentioned at the end of the episode where Lindsay says that Kyle's had multiple indiscretions over the years that they just don't talk about. And she was in the Oprah chair for Georgina on Watch What Happens Live. And Lindsay kind of like gave a little PR answer on that one. You know, I don't know.
But I like Andy's always like sometimes frustrated with Lindsay. And she's like, you said it on the show, right, Lindsay. And she's like, well, I don't know.
I'm curious if it comes up on the reunion, if we get more information about that there. But that's like, That was a big portion of the Summer House reunion too, and so I don't know. We should find out more about that. So whether maybe that'll come up this weekend at the Summer House as they kick off season 11. So I don't know.
I mean, God, it really is fun to speculate what this season
is,
because now they're Emmy nominees. So I was like, I want them to do an Emmy party on Saturday night where everybody dresses up as Emmys, you know, and like, or is it going to change them where they're acting like Sir Richard Attenborough now?
Totally.
I'm like, oh, Jesse, I'm just Sir Jesse, you know, like, I wonder how this is going to affect them.
With the Lindsay and Yvonne sit down on this week's episode, I kind of see both sides where it's like Yvonne wanting Lindsay to have like contributed less to the drama at her big dinner, but then also from Lindsay's perspective, it's like, but like this is a TV show and like the drama was amazing and your dinner became a big moment. But I think like at the core of it for me is like actually a very real thing that even I've experienced in life, which is like they both admitted that like after Gemma was born, after Lindsay became a mother, like their friendship like distinctly changed, and the way that they interacted with each other changed. And I think that now knowing Yvonne's pregnant, like that's even another sort of layer to all of this. Could it come back around? Like obviously now Yvonne and Lindsay are good, but that's a very relatable issue at its core that happens to a lot of friendships.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that was an interesting scene for so many reasons, but once again shows how strong of a reality star Lindsay is, because she was like an immovable wall. You know, at some point Yvonne had to like cut the losses and be like, but we're good. And like Lindsay's right, like, oh yeah, I want to be good and everything. But if Yvonne had made like a last stand and go, no, this stuff does not fly again. I mean, Lindsay is sometimes immovable. I cannot mm-hmm. be like that in real life. And I think that's what it is that we sometimes look to these characters as right, like, wow, like it's almost these things that I can't do in my life that she can, because I would back down immediately. I would be like, oh my God, I did ruin it. I'm so sorry. And Lindsay's like, no, this is the deal. This is what we're doing. And this is, I'm sorry it happened, but like at the same time, I'm not. And Yvonne eventually had to come more Lindsay's way than vice versa.
Totally.
And by the way, but did it without any road bumps. I thought it was a pretty smooth transition.
I agree with you. The last thing I want to ask you about with In the City, did you see this post on Threads where I guess Lexi did like a Q&A and somebody was like asking her about her accent, and yeah, she said that she is always asked about this. She speaks and it has sometimes like a little, like it feels like there's an accent. Yeah. I didn't know where she was from, but she's from America and she's just moved in like Florida and like a couple other states.
She's like the Madonna of reality TV.
She's like the Hilaria Baldwin. It's like, it's very Hillary from Boston. It's
she's like, how you say cucumber?
I was kind of shook. I was like, okay, girl. But anyway.
Well, do you think something like that could actually be a storyline? Like now I always look for storyline.
If they bring Lexi and Andrea back, I really like them. I think that they're really nice people and they're good people, well-liked, but like, so they haven't had any big storylines. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, we know Andrea from Summer House, obviously. He's hot. They're a beautiful couple. They've got a baby on the way. But I know what you're saying is that there was like a dust up with Andrea and Kenny. We had Andrea and Kyle for like a line or two this episode. So it's minimal. Mm-hmm. But I always say, like, when you have a good team, you can throw the ball somewhere else and somebody can pick it up. They have not been able to, you know, successfully complete a pass. But I mean, that's the thing. Do you give them another? This is what I really wish we knew is how casting works.
I know. It's like, I'm not against it. I just like, I think I expected them to be a little bit more of a factor in this show than they have proven to be so far from what we've seen. So let's move on to the Valley. This was kind of a doozy of an episode. It was driving me crazy the entire episode because we find out that it's not only Danny's birthday, but it's also their 10-year wedding anniversary.
Who does that? So he got married. He got married on his birthday.
I mean, it's pretty Danny coded, right?
It really is. And I mean, I hate to state the obvious, but that's so weirdly narcissistic in a way.
Very narcissistic. And then the entire episode, whenever he brings up what day it is, he doesn't mention the anniversary. He mentions he says it's his birthday like 15 times.
I mean, not since Stassi in her 20s right. Have we had somebody so personally obsessed with their birthday where I'm like, you know, I'm so old now that I'm like, oh no, another birthday. I don't want to draw any sort of attention to it. I don't do any kind of, like, I'm very subdued. This man is like, yeah, it's my birthday. When am I getting birthday sex? Like,
he's obsessed with the sex.
Oh, it made me so sad that he kept drinking, knowing that Nia was going to get woken up at some point, a drunk Danny going, it's time. It's not midnight yet.
The B-Day love-in, I think is what he called it. Yeah. And the difference is that Stassi would admit that she's obsessed with her birthday and is insufferable about it. Danny would never admit that about himself. So that's, I think, a big difference there. I thought the boat at the beginning was kind of interesting because we had a couple good conversations that were happening. Like, we had Zach and Jasmine talking about being frustrated with, like, the double standard about the drinking conversation and them being brought up as part of that, because again, it's not about Danny drinking, it's about how he acts and what he says when he's drinking.
I don't know why that's so hard of a concept for Danny to understand, and I think Nia understands
it. He's not understanding it, I think.
But there's only so much mileage you can get out of willfully. Like, and Nia obviously does understand it. And I do understand protecting your husband. I do understand protecting your family. But then don't be on a reality show. Like, unfortunately, there are certain, like, social contracts we make when you agree to be on a reality show. And I would say that for everybody. I would say it for Janet. I would say it for, there are certain things that you have to force yourself to talk and be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I call it having the hot potato. Danny and Nia have the hot potato. Everybody, if it's fair, we'll get the hot potato at some time if you have a multi-season show, but they have it right now. So you should not be surprised when there are so many questions. And I do think it is very telling that this is the person that Jax wanted everybody to look at. Imagine the big bad of the first two seasons going, you know what, but you really should check out Danny. And now you kind of think back to that and going, wow, what else have we not seen potentially?
Sure. Yeah, that's true. And like, when it comes to the Zach and Jasmine thing, like later in the episode when they're trying to clear it up with Brittany and Kristen and Nia kind of misrepresent the conversation, I think,
and there's
a lot of deflection onto Janet doing the texting, which Janet probably, I mean, she was good at being messy, but she probably shouldn't have texted in real time. She would come back to the hotel.
We can agree that's a move, yeah,
right, of course. But like, the point is that they brought up Brittany, Zach, and Jasmine's drinking as a way to deflect from Danny. And they're just deflecting onto Janet, which they always do. And I was just like, and they're mocking her. And the whole thing is becoming like, just, I don't get why Kristen is dying on this hill. That's sort of what I keep going back to that. I'm like, Kristen had so much goodwill in this viewership. She was really like the queen of the show. And I know that she's going through a very difficult time in her life during filming postpartum, but like, that doesn't really explain to me why she is dying on this hill. And I don't know. It's frustrating to watch. It really is for me.
I've spent way too much time thinking about this outside of doing the podcast. But, you know, I really, really like Kristen. I appreciate Kristen. And I think there is something about, you know, which I read this article she wrote a couple of weeks ago about, you know, finding out about postpartum depression and dealing with this after this season filmed. So it's sometimes you have to watch everything, every one of her scenes with an asterisk. And right. I'm like, I hate to say that, but you kind of do. But also, if you are given a small kindness to somebody, and I can see in a world, if real life, not our Sims that we watch on TV, you almost would think that Danny and Nia do present as a good couple. Like, you know, they're clean, you know, Danny's always showing his chest, but he's wearing, you know, like, all, you're like, that's a very clean, they talk about religion all the time. They talk about a higher power. There are a lot of things that I think an outsider that might not have grown up in that environment can go, wow, they really see things differently. This is differently than, and so I can maybe understand that. I always wonder, like, what the reunion will be like, because then they'll have the opportunity to have watched the show, to watch the edit. And Kristen, being such a strong supporter of women, I still don't know how she can't, even if you are trying to be best friends with Nia, or you are best friends with Nia, why you can't understand something very simple about Danny and being able to be his friend and explain to him, Danny, listen, this is what everybody is saying, is that for you, when Brittany gets drunk, all we do is eat Taco Bell. So it's not as dangerous. It's dangerous on the stomach. But when you drink, there have been instances where you have made people uncomfortable and you've done things that maybe you don't remember that you've actually apologized for. These are real life things that have happened. None of these have been on camera, but multiple people now have come forward. So I hope you can understand that. And my question, though, still is like, I don't know why we keep getting. Why are you still drinking?
I know.
Like, why? I'm not your keeper, but that's the question.
When Michelle said to him this episode, if I were you, I would just not drink. Like on,
he kind of just shuns that off.
Like, and he's like, yeah, I know. And like, I do that. And it's like, no, you actually don't. Like, you are, Nia's like begging you not to get another tequila soda. And you are going up to get another tequila soda because it's my birthday, but it's also your anniversary, dude. It's just like, it's,
but also think about it. He ends the episode drinking by himself.
Yes.
Is it worth that much? Is it worth all of the crap that you're getting just for a drink? You know, and maybe like, that's the frustrating part is that
I know
you want to try to be empathetic to all of these people, but I see it in a very clear cut way. And I do also like, listen, Janet's very brave in her admission, you know, Janet truly coming to terms with things that have happened in her. But it also is interesting socially because what you see kind of break out online, and thankfully I'm not on Twitter anymore. I'm just on Threads. I just couldn't do that. I mean, just for some reason, it was just bringing me down every time I was on Twitter. But somebody on Threads, I think his name's Dustin Cohn, who I like, he said, man, over on Twitter, everybody's defending Danny and Nia. And that made me want to go crazy because I was like, well, what are we defending? Are we defending that we should be able to talk down to our wives? Are we defending, like, what are we defending? Because if you're defending that Lala shouldn't come up and do her Lala thing, well, sure, but you're on a reality television show. Mm-hmm. Get off of it. So it drives me crazy where I'm like, well, you're in this structure that is supposed to put you in dramatic situations. You have the hot potato. This is what happens. Nia is being your mouthpiece. And it's like at a certain point, that is not dynamic to watch because we know and Nia knows if she were to let him speak, it would be disaster times 10.
My read on it from people who are defending the Bukos, I'm just like, I think that Janet hate has been so seeded for two seasons, it's so deep that she'll never climb out of that hole with the audience, I don't think. And I think that like there is this like, you're on Kristen's side, you're on Janet's side kind of thing. Like that's ultimately sort of what it wraps up to, I think, in a lot of people's minds. And I think that it kind of blinds a lot of people. And I think that maybe some of them see it as a witch hunt. Maybe it's the religious aspect of them and they respect that part of it. I don't know, but I look at this, I watch this show and I'm like so mad about how yeah. they're handling this. And like, even at the final dinner, it's like, Danny's the one who brings it up. He starts the conversation.
No, he can't stop. He can't stop.
But then the argument is they won't let it go. And it's like, well, you're the one that he's bringing it up. Like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. I'm like, what is going on?
That's the thing. You feel like gaslit by the show sometimes. And I know that's an overly used word, but I always try to think of like, why do I feel a weird joy when I watch Summer House and I feel doom when I watch The Valley, because Summer House has so much insanity happening as well. Like you see what Amanda did to Sierra, those are like really big stakes, but for some reason I'm able to suspend disbelief and still have fun with it. Like even before, like you're like, oh man, that Kyle is crazy. Like, oh, what a bad thing. But then you have fun with him as well. On The Valley, it's almost void of fun. I mean, Zach has some really great moments, and like you see little moments where you do laugh, or just Schwartz going around with a bandage, like not being able to know his place on the show. He just keeps popping up and like, hey, you want to do a shot? Like those moments of like, you're like, there's mini comedies, but it is so dark. And you would think that after Jax would leave, that it would all be like, oh, it's a new day. No, Freddy Krueger's
kind of
gone.
The show is now, I think. I think the tone was set.
Yeah, it never was fun. So why start being fun now? But I'm really curious, either Dan go or Janet goes. And I don't mean the show is going to make that decision. I think one of those two couples are going to make the decision.
I would be pretty surprised if Dania and Nia stayed.
I would too. And I know it'd be unfortunate because I think every one of those people enjoy making money. Mm-hmm. But like, is it worth it? Because Danny keeps talking about reputation. And the thing is, if you cannot actually, like, I know you have a life coach, a therapist, all of these things, you work out and you get all of this stuff, but you can't do the one thing that, like, even act like you quit drinking around these
right.
people.
Exactly.
Like, I don't even know what the actual issue, you're fighting for your right to drink in front of a bunch of people. This isn't Vanderpump Rules where we expected the drink. Everybody has grown up, and you, especially with four kids under four, you constantly remind us of. I don't even know how you're able to process this. I had a glass of wine last week. It knocked me out for like a day and a half. Like, it is, you know, I don't know. That's the thing, is that I just get frustrated for Danny, and I get frustrated for Nia, because I feel like the answers are right there. I feel like it's male bullshit in his way of trying to stand up for some sort of type of male that he thinks he is that you don't need to be.
It's like the more that he tries to prove that he's not a bad drunk by getting drunk on camera to show that he's not a bad drunk, he proves the opposite. It's like he is a bad drunk. And so like whenever Nia's trying to reason with him, I mean, Nia's always coming up and giving him like the bear hug, basically. I mean, like, shut up.
Daniel, please. It's enough, Daniel. Listen to me.
The way that he like, you know, flings her off every time, it's like, that should just,
I mean, she treats him like a toddler. She's like, Daniel, look at me. Daniel.
Yeah, she basically is parenting him. And like, there are a couple, I think, good points that were made. Like, Michelle was explaining it well to him initially that, like,
Jesse.
Well, I was going to say that Janet will apologize for,
oh, yeah,
like everything else, but just doesn't want to be made to apologize for what he did. And then the other thing that I liked was that somebody said they're willing to bury anyone else to hide their truth. And like, it is just like they want the image of the perfect couple, I think. And they want the image of the perfect family. And this is continuously being punctured by their castmates. And Nia tells them all they're terrible people. And so, you know.
Well, and I think those are real feelings. And by the way, we've seen Nia struggle even aside from the Danny storyline of, you know, like, you know, having to drive into the city and mm-hmm. pulling over to breastfeed her kid and how much she has on her. And then you have Danny, who away from this storyline would be like, well, we got to have sex. Oh, right. You're going to have sex with me 35 times after I get my vasectomy. And you're like, the show makes it appear that she is living a nightmare at times, mm-hmm. yet it is a nightmare that she is fully on board for. I thought you were about to say Michelle when she said Jesse. Well, you know, the difference with Jesse was Jesse was no different when he drank. He was he was basically an asshole
right.
when he drank or didn't drink. And I thought, but isn't that true? Like,
there's
drinking does
yeah.
drinking like either kind of like makes you a little bouncier, it makes you a little more hateful, or it makes you completely disgusting, or just like completely even. It hits people differently. And I don't know why Danny doesn't understand that concept of like, it's not his fault that he completely changes, but you do. And how disrespectful to Jasmine and Melissa that we're still having this argument around them. And this was actually done. This is two of the people it was actually done to. Mm-hmm. And I'm always shocked that Jasmine, not that it needs to be her, but like that she doesn't be like, Danny, you actually did this to us. Why are we still arguing about this? Why are you not understanding?
I guess I can't tell the line between like, what they do understand and they can't admit, or what they really truly don't see. I don't know what that is. We had the Lala factor, of course, as you alluded to. Like, that to me, actually, Ryan, is the humor on this show. When Lala gets activated like that, like, I'm actually like kind of laughing because it's like so delicious.
Where did she get
I love it.
She's obsessed with the Polly Pocket reference. And like, so she said, what did she say? Yeah. Peter Pocket last night?
Peter
she said
Pocket.
Polly Pocket.
Yeah.
She said Polly Pocket a couple episodes ago. And I'm like,
one of her kids loves Polly Pocket.
See, that's what I want to know. Where did Polly Pocket come from?
Somebody's
because it's such a specific
her.
Reference yeah. that I know it's got to be like, it's got to be something that she's around.
Totally. But like, to me, she was kind of just like 10 out of 10 performance here. Like, nobody has a problem with Danny dancing or having drinks with his boys, you know, saying about Jesse, I have to go through you and your linen suit and loafers.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm really scared. Shut the fuck up. Don't talk to me like that. I ain't your wife. You got the wrong bitch. Like, I personally love when she gets into this mode. I know that some people don't like it. I love it. I think it's been good for the Valley.
I think it's an easy layup for Lala because Lala
yes,
was not there
totally.
For the first two seasons. So she has no real skin in the game.
Absolutely.
So she's able to do the things the other cast members aren't because of various,
right.
like, which side are you on? Lala's able to, like, okay, this is what I see. I'm able to to get activated in this way. And I know some people are still bothered by it. And I was initially bothered with Lala even coming on this show in the first place. But if she's there, I would rather her be doing stuff like this. I'm like, because still, I feel like Schwartz is out there in the desert just wandering around trying to figure out his place. And part of it's like gay baiting Zach at this point. And like, you could just see him being so uncomfortable with what his place in this show is. But Lala, I'm like, okay, this is her place. She's calling it as she sees it. And obviously, Janet can't do it. Michelle can speak, but she can't speak as passionately as Lala.
Yes.
So I think it's interesting because to have a strong woman that's able to vocalize in that way is something necessary to keep the scene going or the storyline going between Danny and, you know, even watching Jesse respond to Lala is interesting.
Yeah, it's like in the way that she conveys it. And sometimes it's not always even in this like really, you know, passionate way. Like she's had moments this season where she's conveyed it in a much more even way. And I do sometimes feel like she's speaking on behalf of like my perspective as a viewer of the show. And she can feel like the adult in the room to me.
Which I know how insane that sounds, you guys. I get it. That I never thought Lala would be the adult in the room.
But and I feel that way.
But, you know, I mean, that's saying I totally see why you would feel that way. But like I always say, call it the reliable narrator. And for this show, this shows how dark this show is, that Lala is the reliable narrator on this show. Like, that's wild. I never thought we would see the day.
And I don't think we have to like rehash the details, but you alluded to Janet and Lala's conversation, Janet coming, you know, opening up about a sexual assault that she had in college and sort of how it explains some of her anger towards men and, you know, how much of a problem she has with like shame that's put on women as part of some of these situations. And so I, you know, obviously applaud her bravery as part of that. And I think that it does explain a lot of her perspective. And it sounds like she's also like, I think it was probably important from a majority of the viewers' perspective for her to mention that like she's also working through still like with her therapist, how that comes out in situations that she's not even a part of when it comes to the Danny and Jasmine like discussion, and how she sort of like didn't handle that maybe correctly, but it's sort of born out of an experience and feelings that make sense and they're explainable.
Yeah, lived experience.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting because it just goes to show what we always talk about is that there's a reason for human behavior. Mm. There's a reason why Janet went so hard. Maybe Janet didn't even realize in the moment, but there was a reason. She wasn't just willy-nilly just going like sexual assault, da da da. Like there is something. And I think that's always important to remember. And even with Danny, there's a reason. I would be so interested in Danny's history of a young adult and his experiences and even his experiences with alcohol, because something tells me, even though Nia says we drink with our friends and it's great, like I want to know more about things like that.
Sorry.
Well, something tells me that like even with Nia going like we used to go to clubs and he was my own personal magic Mike and all my friends said you had like I'm like, tell me more about that. I want to hear more about the history of Danny and Nia.
I'd love to hear some of those other friends' perspective on those same stories too. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I just keep going back to like this is the person that Jax thought was going to take the role of the bad guy. Like even Jax thought Danny was the one because Jax really did try to throw Danny under the bus. And so I'm curious more about what that was all about. Like, and I do. I mean, Brittany's so funny because Brittany's so caught up in her own, like how everybody feels about her.
Yes.
Like, I'm not a bad guy. No, I didn't do nothing. I didn't do nothing. Where I'm like, I was so interested in hearing Brittany's perspective that she could actually bring to this instead of personalizing everything that happens.
I know.
And once again, that's why Lala is important.
She's weirdly like on an island right now. It's kind of interesting. The last kind of like aspect of this episode that I wanted to discuss with you is this Luke and Kristen subplot where Jesse tells Kristen what Luke said about, you know, if things are still going to go this way, there might not be a wedding. And at some point, Luke sort of clarifies that, like, it wasn't him saying he doesn't want to have a wedding. It's that he's not sure if there will be one if, like, things stay this bad. But Kristen's perspective is like, this is all temporary. Like, we're new to this having a baby thing. And, like, we're both struggling. Yeah. And, like, he is making these sort of rash statements, I guess, like, out basically in the heat of this new moment for them as a couple. It's a difficult thing because I've never gone through that. I know that you're a new parent, Ryan, but like I want to have sympathy for it, but I don't fully understand Luke's perspective. I get Kristen's a lot more.
Well, it is once again one of those things where like with the information we know about Luke, because he says, I'm doing everything. I'm fighting with everything I have. Well, I'm like, I like you, Luke, but you know, you do keep saying you do go sometimes out, get way too drunk, yeah. fall asleep on the couch. I'm like, well, you're not doing like, you know, she's asked for a couple basic things. And I know you love to fish. I know you want to feel like, but I do think there is another kind of contract you have with your partner that we're in, like sometimes what even we're feeling with the newborn is like, we're in over our heads a little bit, you know, it's like, and thank God that we have each other. Like last night, I, you know, was up at 3 a.m. for a couple of hours and I took it. She was there the night before. And in the moment, that's like real quick decision that we make.
Yeah.
I can't imagine if we weren't able to try to back each other up. And by the way, she's still doing the lion's share. Like I imagine Kristen Doty is. But I also can't imagine going out and getting hammered and then falling asleep on the couch. I feel like, you know, so you're what you say is great. You're fighting for everything, but you've got to also show actions. And it's once again, a male perspective that is thinking that they're doing everything right, but they're just leaving out their own personal experience of like, well, you could correct this. And then we also find out she was going through postpartum.
Yeah.
She's telling him already that like, I love you. This is all good. This is what I'm going through. And he's like, okay, that's all I needed. And then weeks, like episodes later, he's back again being insecure, which is valid. But sometimes it's not about you in this moment. It's going to be not about him for a year or more. And it was funny last night when he kind of said that about the wedding. And then he was like, you know what? I didn't mean to say that. That just came. Yeah. I thought he was going to jump into the ocean. I felt bad for him.
But he was like, you're finally recognizing that my pain is just as important as your pain. Kristen literally didn't say a word.
Oh, I mean,
Luke got up and excused himself and took a nap.
You guys think the Danny and Nia stuff, which is overtly dark, but to me, that is like an independent film about a relationship where you're like sometimes it's so uncomfortable. Well, where I will walk out of the room watching the Valley because I want to give them their privacy on screen. And then I'm like, oh no, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you like, the cutaways, like a lot of these scenes on this trip will end with like Nia or Kristen like in the dark bedroom, like with the baby. And it's just like,
or you'll be in the middle of a conversation and then you'll hear a baby cry.
Yes.
And you're like oh God. Because
what did Nia say to the nanny last night? She was like may God like pray for me or like,
oh, pray for me. No, she said it to the people that they brought with him. Just pray for me. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I was like,
yeah.
God is up there going like, I'm really busy right now. I'm actually not even watching the Valley this season. So I don't know what I'm praying for.
The last thing I liked about this episode, I did like the Lacey Michelle connection that was formed. And I thought,
to me, it
proved that like my gut instinct about Lacey from what we've seen on this season so far has been right, and that like she seems like a good, genuine person who like, it makes sense that this situation coming out of Michelle and Jesse's marriage and having Lacey part of that and having Aaron part of that, it makes sense that like feelings were high and heightened and like, you know, words were exchanged, but ultimately it feels like they're landing in a place that's like healthy and understanding and like at least cordial, you know.
I mean, I've been wrong before, but I really like Lacey.
I really like Lacey too.
I love who it makes Jesse. Mm-hmm. Like it's made me appreciate Jesse in a
Absolutely.
Different way. You know, I also love how they argue. She'll like cut him down and be like, never say that or I'm going on this boat. And usually, you know, in that, like you'll have a guy going, well, screw you then. Jesse would be
he
just like
it.
Kind of keep going. He'll be like,
I think he likes
yeah,
it.
You know,
I think he likes it.
It's so weird to watch. And then you're like, okay, that's the engine of this relationship.
Absolutely.
And it's made me kind of appreciate that. And also gives a little more credence to why Michelle is as hurt, because she's really seeing a different man in some ways.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, listen, I know that the Valley is dark for a lot of people. I know that it's not that fun or funny. I'm still like really, I enjoy every episode of the show. Like, there's so much to talk about and there's so
enjoy,
many layers.
Yes. I love like, recapping
it's like,
it's
but very compelling to me. You know, it's not necessarily like, you know, I'm not smiling ear to ear watching it, but you know, there's a lot there. There really is.
I think it's another show that it makes you face your own mortality. It shows that aging is not full of joy. You know, like Summer House is we're going to live forever on the weekends.
Totally.
And the Valley is no, we're not. Mm. No, we're not. It's really, you know, like, and it shows the promise of your 20s, you know, working as a barback or a bartender or a waitress, and then going over the hill, and the reality of a situation, even with money, is so drastically different than your hopes and dreams in your 20s. And so from that, it's endlessly fascinating, but sometimes it can be like going through a haunted house of emotions where you're like, I don't know if I even like being scared anymore, you know?
And that's where I'm so curious, again, as In the City continues to like find its legs and figure out what it really looks like, where does that slot in terms of the overall feeling that the show gives us, you know? Because New York, the hustle of New York is different from, you know, Decamping to the Valley. I think there's a different feeling, I think, that it gives. But like, do any of the In the City people, do they move to the suburbs at some point? Does that add to, I don't know. I'm very curious what that looks like, because I agree with that assessment. I think that's really spot on.
Well, listen, Lindsay doesn't have to move. Lindsay has like a baby grand piano in her play In the City. You're fine.
Very big apartment. Yeah. Let's spend these last few minutes on Next Gen NYC. We're still early in this season. I think it's maybe going to be a short season because Andy's already asking for reunion questions. They're going to get
a reunion. I saw that. I mean, listen, I think this is...
or, I don't know, short season.
I'm curious, but I think it is truly one of the funniest shows on Bravo, maybe one of the funniest shows on TV right now. And there is so much work done by production and editing in this, where it's like it's like another cast member. And I mean that as a compliment. They keep it fresh. They keep it moving. And I don't think the cast understands that they're in a comedy. But I really laugh so much. And it's so like the dramas are so innocuous. It's so
totally.
They're treating it like it has real stakes. And to me, that even makes me laugh. So I really am loving these first couple of episodes, even though the other thing too is like, I just get offended now all the time was like, open the schools. We don't know who Brooke Shields is. Like, what's going on, man?
Yeah,
come
totally.
On.
And listen, it's a big cast. It feels like some of these people are being sort of tested out early in the season. Like, I don't know. I still don't know who Kendall is. I wouldn't be able to spot her in a lineup, but she's there. You know, I think Spike Lee's son is already kind of out of the mix at this point. He was on last episode. There's a lot of new people. There's a lot of people in general, but like, you know, I'm intrigued. Like, I want to see Ariana and Liam maybe try it out. Like, we obviously know now she's with Hudson, but if she wants to be single and ready to mingle, let's do it. I don't know.
I mean, they keep this thing moving. Like, they keep it. It is so, like, tight. If you guys watch this, and I really recommend it, it's, like, with the texting. And they're, like, you know, because I think if you didn't have that editing, it would sometimes slow down the pace so to such a degree that I think it would be close to maybe unwatchable. But it just shows how this production has come together. Like, they make, you know, even Brooks Marks, who is not the most verbal or vocal, they make him kind of a comedic icon in this just by showing, like, random things or him with a face mask on. And I think it's that kind of ridiculousness that is going to make this show thrive, but it's also going to make you be really scared about this generation.
Really scared about this generation.
Yeah. And then somebody was saying what was the last night on Watch What Happens Live? She said Ava Dash is securing a season 3 with a potential relationship with Kyle Cook. I was like, I will give you all of my money to see Kyle Cook show up on Next Gen and hang with the kids. Like, how you doing, fellow kids? Do you like DJs? Do you like spinning records?
I mean, that's probably the age group that he hangs out with at these after parties. You know what I mean? Like, these
are
the
people who go
to DJ sets. So I don't, it's like, and I think that, like, I think Ava and Kyle had been, like, spotted in the spring together. So, like, I think this has been going on, if it is, which I think it is.
But how deep could it possibly be?
No, it can't be, because he's also canoodling with Sally Carson. He's also being spotted holding hands with random fans and kissing them in the audience. So, like, Kyle is in a single era, and I love to see it. I want Kyle single on Summer House. But, like, if Ava Dash pops up to have a sleepover on the weekend or Sally Carson pops out, I'm good with it. Like, I'm like, give us some of the, I like the crossovers. I do think that the end of Winter House, we have lost some of these inter-show moments to actually watch on the shows. And I think that was actually really good. It kind of fueled Summer House and Southern Charm for a little bit there to have those moments coming out of Winter House. So if we get more crossover, I'm all for it.
I'm all for it as well. And I think it's so funny that I think Bravo celebrities are clamoring to be close to Kyle. Like, you know, I am so curious who comes into the Summer House. Gibson, you need to make a shirt that says, I kissed Kyle at his DJ gig.
That's a good shirt. He's lover boy. Just put it, leave the Carl's the mess line and just put that in there. That's good.
Oh, dude, Kyle is going, I'm so excited for this season because with great power comes great responsibility. And I don't think Kyle has it in him to be this open with his, like, making out and stuff. I think he is going to get in such huge trouble. And I don't mean, like, deep psychic trouble like the Valley. It's going to be innocuous trouble where he's going to have multiple girls he's stringing along, and it is going to blow up in his face. And I don't think Kyle's going to know how to deal with it. And I think it's going to make for fascinating reality television.
I'm with you. What do you make of Georgia creating a new company that is a universal cleaning product called Yuck, which, listen, I love a reclaiming of a narrative, right? But what's your take on?
Well, I loved how she explained it, because she was like, what our generation is good at is taking something that exists. And it was like, I like that. It was like, our generation doesn't invent anything, but what we do is repackage it. Also, I'm very dirty. That's what I'm known for. And I was like, yeah. So it, like, for me, it was so hysterically funny. And I think she's dead serious, which makes it even funnier.
I thought she was also amazing on Watch What Happens Live. Did you watch her on Watch What Happens Live?
It was great. When she wrote all the notes, because she didn't watch The Valley. So she wrote notes and she's like, I didn't think you would see that. It was just covered. Her hand was covered.
This says VPR. That means Vanderpump Rules. And they're like, we know.
Yeah. She's like, it says you slay, queen. And I was like, this is insane. Well, this is another person where I'm like, she can't help but be herself.
Totally.
And I think that's it, is that you watch this show and it's almost like a Christopher Guest film where you're watching like Best in Show, where you're like, wait, does that person exist? Like, you had her pitching that with her pitch, like with the guy she was pitching to.
Yeah.
And it was just like, these were all characters in and of themselves. Like, they just kept doing facial reactions. And I'm like, oh my God, these are real people. This is hysterical.
And that's part of why I think that her and Charlie are so essential for the show, because they're divisive, they're quirky, they're really New York. And I think that, like, Next Gen NYC does feel like a New York show, but they needed these lightning rod type New Yorker characters who, like, know the city well, and they have, like, developed these just, like, really these idiosyncrasies. And, like, I mean, Georgia, like, she's out here, like, Riley still is, like, shading her at every turn. But then she's also, like, clocked in with the Hudson Instagram activity randomly. And I don't know. It's interesting where she slots into this group. And I don't know. She intrigues me. She does.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. And I think there's a lot there to be explored and uncovered. And, you know, I mean, I don't know where this show necessarily goes, but I'm willing to watch every episode, because even if there's not like a strong through line besides what Ariana is going to do, it's really fun just to watch little moments. It's like the string of little moments. And I think it's very different than everything else on Bravo right now. And so it's kind of this breath of fresh air. I think I think it's to have The Valley be its lead in is very weird to me, just because you're just like, oh, and then you're like, it's like this. I almost wish they would move to like Tuesdays after In the City, but that's only going to be on for a couple more episodes. I don't know. For some reason, I just feel like the age to go from that to that is just...
And they also both have so many characters on those shows. It's a lot to keep track of in one night. Riley is also just like not the best drunk. And like, I think we saw that last season. We're seeing it again last night, where Ava's like kind of trying to calmly explain to her that she feels more, you know, of a bond with Riley, and they have the same sort of argument style than she does with Ariana and Gia. And then Riley's like, get me a shot. And Ava's like, well, are you going to say please? And Riley's like, I don't need to say please. It's just, she gets very activated when she gets drunk, and it makes for good TV, but she's going to regret that in the morning.
It's interesting because we grew up with like quiet Riley. Of Riley that barely made any sort of sound. So the fact that I'm like slowly watching Riley come out of her shell is interesting. And I always think there's like speed bumps in that, where it's like going to be a bumpy ride. Because sometimes, you know, if you're not used to being confident, you're going to be overly confident. Or if you're not used to being drunk, you're going to be overly drunk. And I think, you know, I'm curious who the real Riley is. Yeah. And that's why I said there's a lot to be discovered. And I think a lot of that potentially comes from insecurity. I could be completely wrong.
And immaturity. She's also one of the youngest ones on the show, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to keep reminding yourself that
she's like 23 or something. You know, it's like, it's a lot. Yeah. Next Gen NYC, lots of dynamics happening, but I'm into it. I really am. I'm glad.
Oh, yeah. I was laughing multiple times last night, where I was like, this show kind of weirdly for me works. I think this is like a breath of fresh air, and I'm glad that they're doing it. I'm just so curious what the outside audience thinks about it. And I try not to get too caught up in the numbers, but I do wonder if these shows are thriving. You know, we never really are aware fully of the streaming numbers. So is it big over there, but not on the nightly ratings? I don't know, really. I don't have a lot of perception of how Bravo's doing anymore in ratings, because we'll get those streaming numbers every 3 months. And it seems like most of their shows are doing amazing at streaming, but their like day and date ratings have taken a big hit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really excited to see the BravoCon part of this season. It must be coming up because they filmed a BravoCon. It's the first show to ever do that. And I was on their flight back to New York, some of them. And like they were all hanging out. I saw Ariana and Charlie chatting at the gate, just them two. All the rest were at like a bar across the way. So I don't know if I'm curious if that's an indication of where this goes in terms of everyone trying to get in their time with Ariana, all the boys.
I'm really glad Charlie came back.
Into it. Me too.
I really didn't think Charlie was into it, and I really didn't think he was going to come back. So he's so magnetic on screen, and you know, I mean, I don't like him like.
No, but,
yeah,
but I like that he like doesn't give a fuck. Like he just like says whatever is on his mind, and I really appreciate it. It's very refreshing, and it feels like he's just kind of here for the ride, here for the paycheck.
Well, the most revelatory thing was him getting upset about the speaker that Georgia had, his speaker.
Right.
And you saw him like just skateboarding around the city like angrily, you know, and I was just like, this is like, you know, it's just this says something about his character. He's like, all of it's in this speaker that Georgia's had for too long.
Totally. And also like, in this week's episode, I'm like, Brooks is the one who has the reality star mom. He's been on reality TV for, you know, 6 years at this point as a minor character, but he knows how this works. He's refusing to sit down with Charlie because he like can't do the moment. Like Charlie's down, you know? I was like, Brooks, you gotta have that sit down, you know?
Brooks is a really interesting character, and that's why I say they almost edit him to be like one of the humorous of the show. And I feel like the editing is doing a lot of heavy lifting for Brooks. And I would be so curious to have a real conversation with Brooks and how he shows up in real conversations. No knock against Brooks at all. Or like, I'm just curious if he is just always like a very shy, soft-spoken person, or if he really opens up and it's like, oh, I can't get this guy to shut up.
Well, what did Charlie say about him? That's the last thing. He says that Brooks used to like go out and get blackout and like be really crazy. And he says, Brooks is an aging gay man with a boyfriend who isn't going to be a party gal forever. I screamed at my TV when he
clocked
said that.
Him.
An aging gay man? He's like 27.
I know. Well, but then they had the Brooks talking about his skincare routine. He was like, when I was 16, I just had this. And they listed like 10. And I was like, but the aging gay man, because you realize that's going to haunt.
Oh, that's
going
to hit. That's going to hit. It's like that's a reunion. He'll talk about that at the reunion.
Oh, he's going to be thinking about that for a decade. Like that is so nailed. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great moment. Ryan, I appreciate you jumping.
Oh, my God.
There's a lot to unpack these days. So I always
always
to come back.
Always happy. And you are killing it, man. You're one of the best in the game. So I'm just so thrilled to be here. And thanks, man.
Thank you so much. Everyone go check out So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. Ryan, we'll do this again soon.
Okay, cool, man.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.